This is part two of our conversation with Dr. Jim Greer on Boyd's Patterns of Conflict. Thanks for joining us.
If you're able to break up the harmony of those so that they don't work well together and you're attacking multiple points within the system, then that's so much more effective.
Greetings and welcome to the Operational Arch, the official podcast of the School of Advanced Military Studies, dedicated to bridging the gap between tactics and strategy through the study of operational art and the operational level of war. Yeah, as I recover from Kelsey going totally off script and bringing her class notes in to a podcast recording, what you're talking about really reminds me of kind of when Boyd comes to prominence during Desert Storm and Desert Shield, and there's a really great podcast from Rusi, where the guest, whose name I'm going to forget, and my apologies to him, talks about kind of this tension between a Boydian approach to Desert Storm and Desert Shield and a Warden Knight approach with his Five Rings model, where you have the air campaign really focused on the physical dimension, but the joint campaign is more integrated with lines of operation and lines of effort oriented towards the moral and the mental approaches. So when he's here, we have this application at a joint, you know, multinational operation approach. And, you know, Schwarzkopf is like, this is pretty Boydian. But how does that tension you're talking about is in play there? How do we make sense of that from a military that's focused on the physical while also acknowledging the value of the moral and mental?
Yeah, I think many of our senior leaders at various times, whether it's Schwarzkopf or Patton or even George Washington, I think they have an intuitive understanding of the physical, mental, moral, even though they may not have written a theory about it. One of the interesting things about the 80s was that the two really emergent theorists were both U.S. Air Force. In terms of Warden and his Five Rings, and then Boyd with his theories. What connects the two of them is systems. They both were thinking in terms of systems. And they were both challenged to a certain extent because the science of systems was not nearly as mature then as it is today. And so they had to, in times, describe the point that they were trying to make in a lot of detail, whereas today we could do it in just a sentence or two because we have the vocabulary that they didn't have. But they were both talking about attacking and really pulling apart systems. And one of the things, if you watch Boyd in videos that are available online as he's talking, he's often using his hands to symbol that he's pulling apart the system. And Warden talked in the same way. And so I think as the U.S. Army was, and not just the Army, but the Joint Force was headed into Desert Storm after the decade of the 80s, we were much more cognizant of a nascent systems approach than we probably were at the end of the 70s or at the end of the Vietnam War. And so when the Sam's team, led by Joe Purdy in Riyadh, was working with General Schwarzkopf, they were able to take a systems approach and integrate that systems approach across the Air Force, Navy, Marine, and Army forces, as well as the coalition, in the design and the conduct of the campaign that became known as Desert Storm. If I can add one thing. I would also point out that really the last two American military theorists that we have had who've had any profound impact were Boyd and Warden, and that was in the 80s, and this is the 2020s. We're about due for some new theorists, and I'm hopeful that they will emerge out of people like yourselves who have the opportunity to think deeply about our profession.
Yeah, I'm just going to let everybody know that I'm going to 100% not meet that bar of expectation. But I do think it's a very interesting thread. It's something that Dan and I and Kelsey have talked about with a couple other guests about how, you know, we recorded an episode recently with Rich Creed talking about the different theorists that influenced the development of FM3O, and just the burning question that is it's unfortunate we have to ask is that we're not getting anything new. And that's odd when you kind of take into context that there's so much discussion talking about how maybe we're in the middle of a revolution in military affairs with the promulgation of AI and automated decision making, or the integration of open source information sharing, or maybe we're just in an evolution of the same topics. And, you know, we've got cyber is now new, space is finally coming into play. You know, it's growing at a rate that we're acknowledging it's large, the capacity of it to have a large impact. And for where I will admit I am a nerd who's like I'm looking for this new thing. I think it's a very interesting question to ask about why Boyd and Warden were the last ones, given that we've had 40 years of growth in the world system and the global system. I don't know if there's necessarily a question in there as much as I'm curious why you pointed that out.
Yeah, I was just pointing it out because I think it's obvious, but I have the same discomfort that you do. I'm not exactly sure why. I really am not. It seems to me that we're due. The character warfare is changing. Maybe not any more rapidly than it has changed in the past, but it is continuing to change. And hopefully there's a theorist out there who can help us to better understand warfare in the early to mid 21st century and be more effective than we are thus far.
So in the absence of that, Boyd and in the context of this conversation, Warden being our last jumping off points, how might a practitioner out there use Boyd to understand the current changing nature of modern or future warfare?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think there's a couple levels. Again, one is if you go through his work, you're learning how to learn about our profession. And that's always a good thing. We all should continue to learn about our profession routinely and continuously. So I always encourage everyone to do that. And I think that's very important. The second thing I would say is that there are a number of approaches that he suggests that in a way are more possible now than they were when he was writing or developing his discourse. And that's because, as you pointed out, there's more tools. His tools were limited largely to Army, Navy, Air Force, and mostly kinetics. And even a lot of the capabilities that exist today in terms of missiles and nascent lasers and directed energy were not even available back then. And so he had this idea of creating non-cooperative centers of gravity. And that idea was that you actually go beyond the term that we use, which is to create multiple dilemmas. So create multiple dilemmas means that your opponent has to think about more than one thing at a time. What non-cooperative centers of gravity suggest, and what Boyd suggested, was that you actually get the different pieces of the enemy formation working against each other. So they're actually competing for resources, they're competing for priority, their execution gets in the way of the execution of other things. Again, I'll use an example from the recent operations or ongoing operations in Ukraine. At the beginning of the Russian special military operation, they had a lot of activity in the Black Sea and with the Black Sea's fleet and with their naval infantry. And their clear objective was to secure the entire Black Sea and to be able to take cities like port cities like Mykolaiv and Odessa. And so they had naval infantry, their equivalent of Marines, to be able to do that. They had their ships, they had their attack aircraft to be able to do that. But very rapidly, the Ukrainians were able to stymie each of those. They were able to block the ability of the Russians to be able to attack towards Mykolaiv, and they disrupted initial reconnaissance landings by naval infantry. And because they were able to deny the skies, they took the Air Force out of the equation. And consequently, their naval forces that were supposed to support naval landings had to do something else, and something else turned into primarily either shooting rockets such as caliber missiles or air defense. And in doing so, the Moskva gets too close, gets taken out by harpoons. The naval infantry, who are supposed to make landings, end up having to go to Mariupol and conduct ground operations there, where they get chewed up very badly and are then incapable of conducting amphibious operations. And so what ends up happening is the Navy, the naval infantry, and the air actually are working against each other. And that's an idea, this idea of non-cooperative centers of gravity, that any planner can look at, or commander for that matter, can look at the enemy and say, how can I do that to the enemy? How can I design an operation that will do that to the enemy? And that's where I think Boyd's theory can be practically applied. And that can be done at any level. You can do that at a battalion level, corps level, JTF level. It doesn't make any difference. If you have the idea of make these different piece parts of the enemy work against each other and take that approach, that's extremely powerful. And when you fold in tools like electronic warfare and cyber robotics and things that just didn't exist back then, you have many more options for how you might go about doing that. And I think that is part of the power of what Boyd brings to us, again, 40 years later.
So you're the author here at SAMS of the Futures course, and we spoke kind of briefly at the beginning of this podcast episode about the theorists and historical studies that paired well with studying Boyd in relation to my last answer. You listed off quite a few there. How do you see the application of Boyd applying to the future as our military systems and our leadership development, coaching, and begins to integrate these new emerging technologies?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one of the strengths of some of our theorists is that their theories stand the test of time. Clausewitz is an example. Even though he was writing about land combat with formations that no longer exist and using weapons that in variation exist but really are completely almost unrecognizable today, his theory has stood the test of time. And I think Boyd is in that category also, in that the themes that flow throughout it, the idea of mind, time, space, and how do you get inside that against the enemy, the integration of the physical, the mental, the moral, the approach of how do I use variety, rapidity, asymmetry, uncertainty against the enemy. All of those things, they stand the test of time in a way similar to the principles of war have. And what that enables us to do then is to take these new technologies, these new capabilities, new formations, and be able to use those in novel ways, but along the lines of his approach to conflict. Again, the social media and just the general connectivity of the world, the global connectivity, just opens up so many opportunities for operating in the moral space in the way that he suggested. And so I think the way I look at it is every time I see a new capability that's emerging and I'm thinking about the futures block or just thinking about the future of warfare and conflict more generally, is part of my mind is saying, how might I use this in a way that Boyd would in order to be able to defeat my enemy, to be able to disorient them and to disintegrate them and take them apart. And again, much of this goes all the way back to Sun Tzu, who Boyd references a lot in his discussions. And that is, try to win without fighting. And Boyd is suggesting that while you can't necessarily win without fighting, you can minimize the amount of fighting if you are attacking the mental and the moral and not just the physical.
Yeah, I go back to, Boyd's slideshow or slide deck, where he has kind of the six steps, to answer the question of how we connect tactical and strategic notions with a national goal. And number six is to prevent unfavorable future conflict. And linking this notion with your comment about a lack of novel American military theorists and how the statement of Boyd kind of melds into the work of Wrigley, Echevarria, and Gray on the American way of war, and how this has kind of been a hot topic within the strategist circles, looking at the fact that our competitors are increasing their technological capabilities, and we've created a operating concept that's now on a continuum, and it's taken, the concept of war and peace off of the table, so that we are constantly repositioning ourselves to prevent unfavorable future conflict, because the tenets of the American way of war, where we have an overwhelming and decisive battle, may no longer be a possibility as these militaries become, increasingly connected to technology.
Yeah, I think part of that, for example, gets into a discussion of center of gravity, which would be another like five or six podcasts. But the Clausewitzian notion of a center of gravity, as then reinforced by Jomini, does focus on decisive battle. It does focus on the clash of major forces. The way that warfare is conducted today, as we all know, is a system of systems, and those systems don't have a physical locality center of gravity, but they have nodes that are more powerful and they have connections. And so Boyd's notion of, again, these non-cooperative centers of gravity, recognizing that there are many and that ideally for the enemy, those many work together. If you're able to break up the harmony of those so that they don't work well together and you're attacking multiple points within the system, then that's so much more effective. And I think to a certain extent, the current FM30 notion of convergence is aimed at that. It's aimed at not synchronization, which is how do I integrate all of my capabilities and mass my effects at a single time and space, but rather how do I employ all of my capabilities across all five domains and all three dimensions, physical, information, and human, to be able to rip apart the enemy system and attack multiple places and disintegrate it, ideally with the minimum amount of physical effort, which of course translates in, ultimately into loss of life on our own part. So we want to minimize that by going after all the other things that we can and defeating the system, not just pulverizing it, which is, again, as you can see the Russians are doing, because thus far they've been much more in the mode of that World War II approach to combat.
So maybe on a lighter note, as we approach the end of today's session, you gave some lighthearted advice to our OPT regarding centers of gravity and COGS. Don't know if you want to share that maybe with Josh, who will be in your comps room, or to other planners out there who are so tempted to put a center of gravity on their slide deck.
Sure.
I'm taking notes. Hold on.
Yes. the caveat to this is I will do this without any names, but my general recommendation is never get into a discussion of the center of gravity with your boss. And there's a couple reasons for that. First thing is center of gravity is controversial. It is theoretical to the max. It is often not useful in the planning of operations. And one of two cases exists. As a SAMster, if you are getting into a discussion of center of gravity with your boss. On the one hand, if your boss is also a SAMster, you're going to end up in a very, very long discussion that's going to be very theoretical, but ultimately not very productive. And if your boss is not a SAMster, you're going to be in a relatively short discussion, which is probably frustrating and also not productive. So my advice as a planner is to avoid getting into that discussion. I think that if you're at the operational level in planning, using the elements of operational art is far more productive, because there are things that we can all wrap our head around, and they're more practical and less theoretical than the COG. You know, for example, the idea of a culminating point. How far can we get before we're just going to run out of energy and capability and have to stop and transition? The ideas of operational reach, again, tied back to logistics, because as we all know, professionals talk logistics. Those kinds of elements and doctrinal terms are much more practical, I think, in the planning of operational and tactical operations than the COG, which is far more theoretical and often not useful.
So I took two notes. My smart student note is don't bring up COGS in comps because it might be frustrating and largely not useful. But my red team note is convince Dr. Greer that I know what I'm talking about when I mention a COG.
Well, we'll see in a week.
Yeah, we'll see in a week. Sir, thank you so much for your time. Do you have any closing words for the audience or some little tidbits of knowledge you want to drop for them as we sign off?
Yeah, the one thing I would like to say is to thank you all for developing and fielding the idea of the operational arch, of an informative podcast for the practitioners of the operational art and representing the School of Advanced Military Studies. This, as maybe everybody who listens doesn't know, is entirely voluntary on your part. It's over and above your schoolwork, which is pretty hefty. And you're off to a great start. I mean, every one of the podcasts has been informative. It's been enriching. It's caused me to think about things or go look up things that I hadn't thought about for a while or that I need to think about. And I really do thank you all for doing that, as well as Eric Price, who was a student when I was a director, who's the architect behind the technology that lets you all make these podcasts. So my hat is off to you all for doing it. I think it's a great initiative. I hope that it will continue to the same standards that you all have developed well into the future, because this is the kind of intellectual leadership that the force needs, and you've done a great job at it. So thank you very much for that.
Well, thanks for being a guest and adding to some of the best informative and thought-provoking discussions that I've been able to partake over the last 6 months. So thank you for your time.
This has been an official publication of the School of Advanced Military Studies. The views and expressions heard here are those of the authors and do not reflect the official position or opinions of SAMS, the U.S. Army, or the U.S. government. Stay up to date on all things SAMS and the Operational Arch by following us on Twitter at US_SAMS. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to or follow the podcast. Additionally, if you have recommendations for an episode, send any proposals to operationalarch@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.